5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna write words oh so sweet, they're gonna knock me off my feet. A lot of kisses on the bottom, I'll be glad I got them. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better, and close with love the way you do. I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe that it came from you. I'll be glad I got 'em. I'm gonna smile and say, I hope you're feeling better, and then I'll close with love the way you do. I'm gonna sit down, write myself a letter, and make believe it came. The same, I'll make believe it came from you.
The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room episode, 257, and it is the 9th of December, which is almost Christmas, 14 more days to Christmas, which is kind of exciting, so 15 days, I do apologise, kind of exciting. Unless you're not into Christmas, which it's very commercialized these days, isn't it? But when you're grown up, it's not as much fun as when you're a kid. But hey ho, bar humbug and all that. I'd say so. I do know someone who's absolutely crazy about Christmas, and here she comes now.
Thank you. and lost.
Hello. Yeehaw.
Hi.
I'm not in a yeehaw mood tonight. I'm just not.
I am excited. I am, and I have to start watching Christmas movies.
No, you're not one of those, are you? Oh, they're terrible. Every single one of them, terrible. There's obviously the whole debate about Die Hard, you know,
Die Hard as a Christmas movie.
You know, and I'm not sure. Okay, it takes place at Christmas. It's not really a Christmas. To be fair, my favourite Christmas movie is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And we watch that every year. That is consistently funny.
I love The Santa Claus with Tim Allen. I do. I just love that movie. And I still cry every single time at the end. No matter what, I cry. And no, I love them. And a couple of years ago, we had Tara Sibbick on the show, and she was promoting her book, A Christmas Cliché. And she sent me a copy of it, and I read that thing, and I loved it so much. It was just, you know, cute little rom-com. And it was, you know, it's called Christmas Cliché, and it had, you know, a lot of cliches, and it was cheesy, but I loved it. Oh, my gosh, I loved it. So, like, I put out a Facebook post earlier today, and I'm like, you know, send me the rom-com, you know, recommendations, you know, Christmas rom-com, because I think I need one of those to get me in the mood. So.
Well, there's all these in my Hallmark. Pretty much showing all just back-to-back. They're all the same fucking film, I mean, you know.
Small-time
girl who went to work in the big city and comes back home and falls in love with a guy in a fucking sweater and his business is in trouble and they figure, give me stress. But then again, you know, we moan about formula, but, you know, DC and Marvel movies, they're all bloody formulaic and same old, you know. Hang on, I've got a fly again. What is it with the, you know, during the show, I'm going to get this fly.
Yeah.
I'm fat. Hold on. Oh, bollocks. What? Hang on.
Are you talking
it
to the fly?
I was taunting it so it would get angry. And then, you know, as it got angry, then it would lose its concentration a little bit.
It made
one mistake that I was waiting for. So I can now take great pride in the fact that I've just outwitted a half-inch long insect. So there you go.
You got it. Yes.
Don't fuck with me. Don't fuck with me, insects and whatnot.
I send you pictures and little video of the new little pet that we, I don't know what you call a bird, but the little
birdie. I thought you were only babysitting, so you stuck with it for good now.
I thought that was the plan. I thought we were just going to watch him for a couple of weeks. And my aunt has decided that her allergies just totally cleared up when she, you know, parted ways with him. So now I guess he's a permanent resident. And I have to say he's cute. He really is. And he's so, like, chattery. He's got a lot to say, I think. I mean, he's always singing and chirping, and it's just really cute.
Aww.
And you go in the room, and he starts in, and we talk to him, and he chirps back, and so he's pretty cool. And, you know, Christian has called, you know, named him Stan, and then we have Stan the Canary, and I can't stop taking video, because he'll just get, oh, my God, this is awful, too, because I listen to a bunch of different things, and right now I've been listening to a lot of Christmas music, of course. But as you know, my son likes, you know, death metal.
Yeah.
And he had some Morbid Angel playing the other day, and you would not believe that the birds started to harmonize with Morbid Angel. I was like, oh,
oh, that's fantastic. Yay,
no,
go birdie.
No. It was so funny. I mean, both of us looked at each other like, did you hear that? Is the bird really, that was pretty cool. Metalhead bird. I don't know what to say.
Brilliant.
About that.
I love it. I love it. That's great. That's great. So, well, congratulations on the new addition to the family then.
Yeah. Yes, now there's 3 ankle biters, 2 ball pythons, and a canary.
You'll be catching me up next. You really will.
You definitely have us beat. And I think, it's good to keep that always, above us, all your animals. How are all your dogs with your, do you have a Christmas tree up? I mean, how are you going to do that this
year? No, the Christmas tree's going up this year. This week. We were going to get it last weekend. The weekend before. When my son was around with his truck, and we went to the Kroger, so we all piled in the trucks, and they didn't have them in at our local Kroger.
Really?
And the one I go to a bigger one down a bit further away because it's got more stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a job for this weekend, to go get the tree and put it up. I mean, we've got some pretty high tables to put. We obviously having dogs all these years, we're used to keeping Christmas trees out for dogs reach. But the puppies, we had them fixed last week, so one of them still got a cone on. The other cone came off yesterday. Okay. The other one, we'll give them another day or so. And then obviously they just look at you like you're the worst human on the planet. But they bounce
so
back
pitiful.
And they're fine, and they're back to the crazy selves, and it's great. Yeah, they're really sweet. But they're getting so big.
They can
now sort of, stand on the hind legs and reach onto the kitchen countertops for, so anything within, nose distance goes pretty quickly. So, what have we got this show? I presume we've got somebody on the show. This is just us. I don't know.
No, it's funny that sometimes when I contact a guest and I don't hear back from them right away, I'm like, I don't, maybe we'll just, talk for an hour. We did have one of our guests that, answered back, and I was so excited because, getting toward the end of the year, and I was just like, oh gosh, please let somebody, come on the show. Otherwise, it's just me and James talking for an hour. And, I think we could do it. I mean, there's no doubt that we could do it. But,
who wants to listen to that drivel? You're talking
about our
snakes and how many puppies we've got. I mean, a little bit dull, but hey ho, at least the main thing is we'd be entertained if no one else was, so there is that going for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. But we are in luck. We have a guest tonight. It's a horror author, Mark Sheldon, and I'm excited to talk to him. I think that a month or so ago, I think I had to reschedule him because I accidentally double booked, and he was gracious enough to say yes, he would definitely come back on, and I'm excited to talk to him. So I'm going to introduce him, and you push the button. And
I will push this, and hopefully right. I'll push the right button. I'll do my best. No promises, but I'll do my best.
All right. Tonight's guest is horror author Mark Sheldon.
Hello.
Hello, there you are.
Can you hear me? All right.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
There we go. We're all here.
Awesome.
Are you excited for Christmas, Mark?
Yeah. My mother died about 3 years ago on Christmas, so it's kind of become hard in that sense. Since then, but I am still looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was, Facebook has this wonderful way of, showing you memories from, previous years, and I saw one a couple of days ago that had been, you know, my mom's first, oh, wait, my mom's, the last Christmas, wait, I will get this out, I promise. The first Christmas after my mom passed. And I was just like, oh, man, I remember that just that feeling I had of, you know, I don't have my mom with me this year. And it was 2017 was the first year, and it was awful. And, you know, I don't know. I try to, I'm not one of those people that, you know, lets everything, I don't know how to really put it, but, you know, I try to make the best of things no matter what you're going through, you know, just, and, the one funny part, I suppose, is that I still get angry at my mom because she's not here for me to ask her what temperature to cook things. And that's like my hugest gripe, I think. I'm like, you know, what temperature? And I have to Google it now instead of just asking my mom. And so every time that Christmas rolls around, I'm like, oh, man, she's not here again for me to ask this question to. And that'll never get old for me, I don't think. You know, it's a little bit of frustration there that I have to Google something. But
you have to figure it out for yourself now.
Exactly. And I guess that means I'm grown up, you know, and that's never a good thing. And I have kids that come to me and ask, you know, what temperature do I put things on? I'm like, do I look like your grandmother? You know, and then the bad thing is they're telling me that I kind of do. So, and but I am excited, and I've got the music playing, and I'm, you know, want to watch the movies and read the Christmas books, and I don't even know. Go caroling. Do people do that anymore? I don't think people do that, but that's, you know, they should.
Not that I'm
it's
aware.
Really,
yeah.
I know, but it's a cool thought, though, you know.
that's sort of traditional.
Yeah.
The word's not coming to me, but I get what you mean. And National Lampoon's is also on my yearly watch list. That and Adam's Family, which is also a Christmas movie.
Adam's Family? You know, I did not know that. I will put it on my list now, though.
Because it opens off with them jumping the hot tar on the Christmas carolers.
Nice.
That was the opening scene of the first movie.
There you go.
And the second movie is Adam's Family Values is our Thanksgiving tradition.
Nice. I do like that. Yeah. You know, last year I watched a really cute little James, you know, complains about these Christmas movies, and he's got a point that they're all pretty, you know, pretty cheesy. But I watched one last year that was it was called Last Christmas, I think, and it was with the chick who played in the Game of Thrones movies, the Mother of Dragons, and she was. It's just cute as a button. I mean, you would not think that she would be in this little rom-com role, but it totally fit her. And I think I watched the movie twice last year, which the boyfriend thinks that means he gets out of it this year, but I don't know. I might be feeling it again. Yeah, it was really cute. And I cried again. I don't know, maybe I just want to cry or something because, you know, I do cry in all of these movies, but yet I still think that's
you know, the movies just make me want to cry, to be honest with you, but
it was cute. You know, it's
not
funny because
not my cup of tea, I have to say. I'll tell you a good Christmas movie, because obviously it's got snow in it, is The Thing. That would be a good one. That I would watch at Christmas. Yeah.
You know what? We could put The Shining on the list because it's cold
and
snowy.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. There you go. Misery. Yes. There you go. So a whole new subgenre of Christmas movies because it's snowing a bit, you know. So.
I like it. I said, oh, my gosh, James, do you remember when we had, The Stolen Tongues, Felix Blackwell? You remember when we had him on? And did you read that book, The Stolen Tongues? Did you read it?
Not yet. No, it is on my list to read.
It The prologue starts with this bird that, you know, talks, and it's really creepy. Just the prologue alone will kind of creep you out. And now that we have the little canary downstairs, I'm like, oh, God, please don't, you know, talk or anything. So, yeah, it's awful that, you know, I'm reminded of that sometimes late at night when I'm, you know, going to close the blinds or something. He's, like, peeking at me with one eye. I'm like, if you whisper something to me, I'm going to freak out right now. So, you know, he hasn't yet, because if he did, he'd become snake food. I'm afraid. So, anyway, Mark, you are here to talk to us about your book, Sarah Killian, The Marching Tides. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, this is the third book and most likely the last in the Joy of Killing series. The first two books that covers the story of Sarah Killian. She's a serial killer for hire. So she works for a secret organization which contracts killers to go out and kill people en masse, basically.
A woman for a hire killer. That's pretty cool. I like that. She's pretty badass then.
Yep.
I have to admit, that is the one thing that I just do not like in books, is when they make the chick, you know, some weak, you know, a female who needs the guy around to protect her, and she's going to fall into his arms and, you know, blink her eyelashes up at them adoringly and stuff. I love that, you know, this girl can kick some
that
ass. That's pretty cool.
Very definitely not Sarah. She is the antithesis
nice.
Of that.
Awesome. Yeah, and you said this will be your...
The exact opposite.
This will be your... And you said this will be your last book. How many books have been in the series?
This is the third one.
I'm not.
I haven't killed her off or anything, so I'll never say never. But this is the story arc I envisioned, at least. I wasn't sure when I set out how many books it would be. I figured between 3 and 5, and I managed to get the story told in 3. So.
Now, when you the end the last book in a series, and you think you're done, are you sad? Do you like feel like you're saying goodbye to old friends, or are you kind of anxious to move on to something different?
A little of both. Sarah's been, it's not an easy character to write. It's especially since I tell it from the first person. So I really have to get into that headspace of a sociopath, which is not the most pleasant place for me to be. So
and a female. I was going to – that's where I thought you were going with that, you know, getting into the female head. But, but now you have to have a female sociopath. Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So it's not the most – comfortable place to be, so there is a certain amount of relief to have gotten the story out, because it was burning in my head, and but I will miss, I do enjoy writing her, I don't want it to come off like that, but it is a challenge to get into that headspace. I have to take more time than I do, and like take more breaks and work on other things while I'm working on a Sarah book, so I'm not completely in that headspace alone.
Now, do you write other genres, or is it basically all horror?
I've done some sort of like sci-fi and sci-fi fantasy crossover. My first series was the Norrison Chronicles. That was a 12-part book, basically. Imagine Harry Potter meets the X-Men and Da Vinci Code.
Nice. Wow. That's a lot going on there. So, that would definitely be a big difference than the horror of, you know, the Sarah book. So I guess that, do you almost take a breath when you get to move on to something else then? Are you already working on something else?
I have a few other projects running around in my head. There's another book which I've been trying to find a publisher for several years, which I'm probably just going to end up self-publishing. That was another horror story. It was called The Motif. It's about a basically imagine if The Ring, instead of being a videotape, was a MP3 music file.
Oh, I like it. Yeah, that movie creeped me out. That was a pretty good one.
Yeah. I made the mistake watching The Ring. I was living in Boston, and the power in my apartment had gone out. And I said, well, I can't do anything here, so I might as well go out to a movie. So, because I lived right across the street from an AMC theater, so I went across the street to the theater and went to see The Ring, and then came home to an apartment with no power, and I realized very quickly that was the best of that. Almost.
That would have been... I love horror.
That.
I do. I love, you know, reading and watching, you know, horror movies, but I'm such a wuss. I can scare myself getting up to go pee in the middle of the night. And there's, you know, nothing going on, and yet I still... And I play this little game with myself where I think that if there is some kind of scary, evil, demon-like thing that's, you know, in the corner of the room, I'm like, well, he can't read my mind, so as long as, you know, I don't let him know that I'm terrified, he won't bother me. So, you know, don't look over there. You know,
it's like when you're a kid and you were scared of, you know, the crazed axe murderer that was obviously in your room, and if you hid under your duvet,
yes.
You know, duvets are obviously, you know, impervious to axes, you know, so.
Yes. Do you remember Gerald's Game when Jesse, she's, you know, handcuffed to the bed and stuff, and at night she thinks she sees something, you know, over
yeah.
there by the window, and he's made of moonlight. That scared the crap out of me. And it's kind of like that. It's like, you know, you kind of see something, or you kind of, you know,
yeah.
you're scared, but you don't really see it. Yeah, so.
Well, it's funny.
Yeah,
I watched that again very recently, and it still stands
so
up.
Good.
It is incredible. And it's just like you say, you know, you think, hey, how can they make a two-hour movie out of a, you know, or a book, you know,
yes.
the things, but, you know, a woman tied to a bed, but it's incredible, you know, the tension is there, and you feel
yeah.
it, you know, you feel it for her, and it is incredibly well done, you know, and the
yeah.
flashbacks and the, I guess, hallucinations, and although for me, I don't remember if it did in the book. But in the movie, it never explained what happened to the dog. And I was worried all the way after. I was worried about the dog and what happened to him.
Huh. You know what? I don't remember either.
Maybe Steve King's going to, he'll write a sequel. It'll be the, you know, Gerald's
maybe
dog or something.
He's out
yeah.
there. He's out there somewhere. Yeah.
It'll be the dog story, which would be great. I'd love to know. Because obviously the thing is, he got a taste for human flesh, so, you know, the possibilities are pretty much endless there.
Yeah, I think I remember at one point she, like, finds a way to throw something at him, and he ran away, but maybe he came back. So, no, I don't remember what happens to him. Yeah, it's pretty
sad.
Yeah,
I don't remember either.
Yeah, that was a great... I remember when I found out they were making the movie, and I didn't have a lot of... I didn't think it was going to be that good. I really didn't, because, like you said, James, I just was thinking, how are they going to, you know, so much of this takes place in her head. They can't do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I only read it because you told me to. Be honest, you said you read it and said
so
you've really got to read this, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it was King at his very best for me. It was incredibly well done.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, I think we're going to take a quick break. So, Mark, you don't go anywhere, and we're going to have a little song, and then we'll be right back. And James got to push button now.
Did you know you've done nothing but nag me about these damn buttons all night? You know, it's, when have I ever pushed a button incorrectly? I mean, ever.
Well,
let's leave that there, shall we? We'll go for the break.
Radio show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Don't wish it away, don't look at it like it's forever. Between you and me, I could honestly say that things can only get better.
welcome back to part two.
Well, we are back. You know, I just realized next week's our last show of the year, which means I'm going to be obliged to play a Christmas song, aren't I?
Woohoo! Yes, I'm excited. Can I pick it out? Can I pick it out?
No. No, you can't.
Oh, I was gonna say.
No, I'm going to play the Christmas song, the only one that I actually can stomach, so that's that.
Man, because I was gonna try to find some kind of Christmas medley that'd be like 10 minutes long or something. That would be
I'd rather die, to be honest. Mark is back with us. Are you a sort of a Christmas song sort of person, or you like me and it makes you want to run screaming from the grocery store?
I mean, I do love the classics, but at the same time, the overkill of the unending barrage of Christmas songs does get a little overwhelming at times.
especially when it's still October and they start playing the Christmas songs. Right. Like, oh, just no. Yeah. It just makes you want to set fire to HEB. I just don't do that.
Wait until Thanksgiving.
at least wait until when I was a kid, it was like, you know, 2 weeks before maximum, not the middle of bloody October. You know, and it's too much, you know, and I know it's all very bar humbug right now, but it's like, no, just stop it. It's far too long, far too long. Just, you know, because the problem is, and I'm noticing, I guess it's a cultural thing. I mean, from Thanksgiving onward, I know when I lived in England with my second ex-wife, she was telling me, you know, in America, it's sort of pretty much, the country's pretty much on wind down from Thanksgiving to New Year's. And it's true, you know, you have your Thanksgiving.
And I love it.
December is just, certainly when you're in business, you know, and people just, they don't care.
Everything
slows down to an absolute sloth rate.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
No, it's not.
The first time we heard a Christmas song in the store, I was so excited, and the boyfriend's going, disgusting. And I'm like, I was so excited. I was like Buddy the Elf with, you know, Santa. That was me. And
oh, dear
he
Lord.
Was the Grinch. And I know. But Mark, I want to hear more of Sarah Killian, and I think we have a clip. Do you need to set it up or anything?
This is the first chapter of the final book. Only thing really you need to know is where we left off with the last book. Sarah returned home to LA to find out that her mother had been killed in a explosion. Her mother had previously been incarcerated when Sarah was a teenager for the murder of Sarah's abusive father, and so Sarah and her mother did not exactly have a healthy relationship, so Sarah's conflicted about that, and that's where we start off with this book.
Cool. I shall, before she asks, I shall press the button, and off we go.
Do we have to do this Julie Andrews getting to know you bullshit again? I have to bury my mother today. Well, there really isn't anything to bury, but it's her fucking funeral, and I'm not here to argue semantics. You get the point. And I am so not in the mood for this. Okay, fine. Let's just get this over with. Previously on The Universe Shits on Sarah Killian. My name is Sarah, and I work for a super secret organization called the Trusted Hierarchy of Everyday Murderers, them, that employs professional serial killers, PSKs, and assassins, I hate, hate, hate assassins. So I find it particularly appropriate that their title starts with two asses. Them is contracted by various entities. A few wealthy private citizens and corporations who can afford us. But most of our work comes from the government. Completely off the books, of course. Assassins' work is pretty boring and straightforward, so I won't waste my time on them. The PSKs is where them gets innovative. As a PSK, when on a project I get sent to a location, usually for several months, if not years, at a time, where I integrate myself into the community under a pseudonymous dupe personality. My dupe personality is the everyday person who just goes to work and lives their life, and is my cover for being in the area of the murders. Meanwhile, I also have to create the persona of the killer, the herring. The herring for each project has to have a unique MO and set of characteristics that distinguish itself from other projects I may have worked on to avoid anyone being able to connect the dots from one project to another. I also have to make sure no one connects the dots between my dupe personality and my herring personality. Fortunately, seeing as I mentioned the government is one of our biggest contractors, we have a certain amount of immunity from the FBI. But there are enough private dicks in the world that it's not a bad idea to take the extra precaution. As you can imagine, the fact that many serial killers suffer from multiple personality disorders lends itself well to developing these dual personas when on a project. Them has a team of specially trained surgeons. I call them the fabricating ugly cock kissers. Fucks. Because I hate them all and everything they do, although I begrudgingly have to admit their work is pretty fucking impressive. It's basically some sort of merging of plastic surgery and prosthetic makeup. Less permanent than the former, but longer lasting and more realistic looking under daily in-person scrutiny than the latter. My boss, the man who originally recruited me and founded them in the first place, is a man who I only know by the name of Zeke. At the time Zeke recruited me, I was 22 and had killed 13 people since I was 16. The feds so far had not pinned me for any of the murders. Them, however, is somewhat better at their job than the feds and had succeeded at connecting the dots for all but one of my murders and traced them back to me. Zeke, who is even better at the job than his subordinates, had managed to connect me to that last murder as well. A fact which he has not been afraid to use as leverage on me over the years. When Zeke approached me, he gave me the following offer. Work for them and receive full immunity for any murders committed under contract for them, or them will hand me over to the feds. The catch was that henceforth any non-work-related murders committed by me would result in an immediate termination of my contract with them, and I would be immediately handed over to the feds. Even with that one condition, it was not a hard choice to make. Fortunately, back in his heyday, Zeke had been a serial killer in his own right before founding them and retiring, so he is fairly understanding of the urges we get from time to time and is therefore reasonably open-minded about getting us quick and easy one-off jobs when needed. For over 8 years, this was the perfect arrangement for me. Get paid to go out and kill people without any fear of prosecution? Yes, please. Then, last fall, everything fucking changed and went down the fucking shit pipes. Sorry, I have Tourette's, which you'd already know if you'd read the first two installments, and we wouldn't have to be doing this damn recap to begin with. Anyway, as I was saying, last fall, everything changed when I got put on an assignment in Minnesota. It should have been a fairly standard assignment, plant myself in high school as a temporary substitute teacher, kill a bunch of cheerleaders, blame it on the goth kids, and get out before anyone catches on. That's what the project should have been, but then at the last minute, Zeke slapped me with a trainee. At the time, I knew her as Bethany, though I later learned her real name was Mary Sue. Bethany slash Mary Sue was basically the antithesis of everything I am. Bubbly, perky, outgoing, and loquacious. Oh yeah. As if all of that wasn't enough to make me hate her, she was religious, too. How she managed to balance her religious beliefs and being a PSK is one of the great mysteries of life I never truly was able to comprehend. As it turned out, Mary Sue was not a trainee, as I had been led to believe, but an assassin who had been assigned to me for extra protection. Turns out a former them assassin named Nick Jin, who had something of a mental breakdown and gone rogue, invalidating his contract with them and earning him a lifelong cell in Los Angeles County Prison, had escaped from LACP and was on the loose with a vendetta against them. So Zeke had ordered all PSKs to be partnered with assassins for extra coverage. The reason for the whole frainy charade was that Zeke suspected I would have been even less receptive to the idea of being the babysittee instead of the babysitter. To be fair, he was not at all wrong. Anyway, Nick had indeed targeted Mary Sue and I on our assignment and began killing people in Duluth, throwing an effective wrench into the plans for our assignment. Nick confronted me and offered to let me join him and his mysterious co-conspirator as they sought to bring an end to them. Seeing as them had been nothing but good to and for me, and without them my immunity from the law would also be gone, I was not overly inclined to accept his offer. Nick did not take my rejection well. He tried to kill me. I pushed him out a window, and then he disappeared into the night. Sadly, that was not the end of it. 4 months later, Nick resurfaced, making trouble for them again. Zeke came up with the brilliant, "The fact that there isn't a sarcasm font invented yet is one of humanity's greatest failings as a civilization," idea to use me and Mary Sue as bait and sent us out into the backwoods of Tennessee on an assignment to try and lure Nick into a trap. The decoy assignment was to investigate and kill a family of alleged KKK members who stirred up trouble. As it turned out, the family was actually innocent of being white supremacists, though the head of the family, Clark Grobe Sr., was still a worthless wife-beating piece of shit. In order to gain information and spy on the family, I had developed a relationship with Clark Grobe's nephew, Duke. And yes, by relationship, I mean that I fucked his brains out. Don't give me that judgmental bullshit. What, it's fine for James fucking Bond to sleep with every woman he lays eyes on, but I fuck a hillbilly for work and that makes me a slut? Fuck that double standard bullshit. Besides, Mary Sue was fucking another one of the cousins. Not sure how that helps my argument, but fuck you. Anyway, Nick took the bait, got in the way of our decoy assignment, and, once more, offered us to come over to the not-so-bad side. In an attempt to convince us, Nick confessed them had been experimenting on him with a new mind control technology that would allow them to program someone, anyone, into being a temporary killing machine. The experiment had gone wrong on Nick and had led to his alleged mental breakdown, which resulted in his being disavowed by them. Normally, I would have scoffed at such a tinfoil conspiracy story. However, Nick had displayed multiple examples of having enhanced brain powers. I hesitate to call him psychic, but really that is the best word for it. So if them had been experimenting on his brain, that could explain how such talents may have been awakened. Anyway, once again I rejected Nick's offer, and in the fight that ensued, Mary Sue was killed. This sucks balls, because I had started to come around to liking the twit, against all my better judgments. I retaliated by killing Nick. You'd think I'd be able to rest easy, believing my enemy defeated, but alas, I'm haunted by the enigma of Nick's unidentified benefactor, the puppet master who still lurks in the shadows, pulling their menacing strings of fate. With Mary Sue dead, I was left to clean up the loose ends of our decoy assignment in Tennessee by myself, which means killing the two cousins Mary Sue and I had been sleeping with. I felt bad about killing Duke. He was a good guy, but the job is the job. Loose ends can't be spared. Zeke had ordered me to spare the head of the family, Clark Grobe Sr., unless absolutely necessary. However, the bastard was such a disgusting wife-beating pig, and I admit I was in a bit of a vengeful mood after having lost Mary Sue, the only person in years who I had even come close to considering being a friend. I disobeyed that order and killed the creep anyway. I'm probably going to be getting hell from Zeke over that insubordination. Hell, I'll be lucky if I don't get fired and handed over to the feds, to be honest. All the loose ends cleaned up, I returned home to Los Angeles to be greeted by the news that my mother, who had been incarcerated in Los Angeles County Prison for the murder of my asshat wife-beating father when I was a teenager, had been killed in an explosion that had completely obliterated LACP and left no survivors. And here we are. You're all caught up. Happy? Now, if you don't mind, I have a funeral I need to get to.
I like that. Hello.
Oh, we're back. Yes.
I was sort of, yeah, I was just drifting away with that. It was brilliant. Well done.
Thank
a
you.
Lot going on. And I do have to ask, you know, when you decided to write the series, what made you make a woman the main character? Like, I mean, I know you said earlier about the psychopath, but I mean, was it easy to get into her head, or how did you do that?
It all started with the name, actually. I was working for a music licensing company and doing basically data entry. And every day I was seeing the same artists over and over and over again on this list. And on this list there was Sarah McLachlan and another artist who I've now forgotten who they were, but the last name was Killian. So I kept seeing Sarah Killian, and my brain just jumped to, that kind of sounds like serial killer. And from that, just the, like, Sarah Killian serial killer for hire title immediately was the next thing that popped into my head. And all of a sudden, she was, like, fully formed. The first chapter of the first book just kind of, like, wrote itself immediately. And, yeah, it just went from there.
That's brilliant. It's nice when that happens. It is nice when that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do love it when the authors that come on will say, you know, it just wrote itself. Like, I didn't, and I find the same thing. There's a lot of times in my own writing that I've looked back on things and I can't even remember writing something like that. And there's been times that I'm like, man, that's not even how I talk, really. I mean, that's totally the character. That's totally. And, you know, there's a part of me that's like, can I even take credit for that? I mean, it almost feels like, I hesitate to use the word channeling, but that's almost, you know, because it does at times. It feels like, you know, these characters aren't just, you know, our imagination, that there's, you know, they have a story to tell. And
in the Norrison Chronicles, yeah. I had this whole plot line worked out for the main character and his love interest. They weren't going to get together until, like, much later in the series. Like, halfway through the fourth book, the girlfriend said to me, nope, I'm not having this. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll have to restructure that. But
yep. Yeah, it's funny. I write a lot of poetry, and there's times that I have an idea. I'm gonna write this poem, and this is what it's gonna be. And then halfway through it, I'm like, well, that's nowhere near what it started out to be. And it's just odd how it has a, you know, the writing just has a mind of its own, and it goes in its own direction. And I guess that's good. I mean, it's definitely not forced. You know, it's not forced when that happens. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with Sarah, you know, you're like, I'm done with her. You know, this is the third book and we're over. And, you know, I don't know, you know, she's one of those characters that could definitely, you know, in a couple of years, just come back and, you know, you might not be over with her. You know? Yeah. I love that.
That's why I never say never, but
yeah, definitely. I hate to do this, but I think we are almost out of time for our show. The first thing you have to promise to come back and see us.
Absolutely.
Yay! And I sometimes it's an awkward pause, and you're like, oh God, is it going to be like, you know, I'm good.
I'm busy that week.
But tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Easiest place is Facebook, author Mark Sheldon. I don't really have a dedicated website at this time. There's the website for the Norrison Chronicles is a decent hub for finding my links, which is norrison.webs.com.
Awesome. And for everybody out there listening, go out and buy Sarah Killian, The Marching Tides by Mark Sheldon.
Yep.
And you, Mark, you have to go out and start watching some Christmas movies, you know, and The Shining and Misery.
The Shining and The Thing. And yes, those Christmas movies. Those Christmas movies are acceptable. Adam's Family, yeah, brilliant. So, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes,
thank you, Mark.
Great.
Thank you. I will speak to you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye.
Where did the time go?
It whizzes by, the show starts, and, oh, God, we've got a whole hour of this or a whole 90 minutes, and then here we are, and it's like, oh, well, you know, it is literally time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.